Hello and welcome to the Surface Tension Podcast. My name is Alex. My co-host over here is Craig. We are going to be exploring deep questions and looking for deep answers to spiritual questions and questions about life in general. We're happy to have you here, and here we go.
Hi, welcome to our podcast, starting with a question that may surprise you.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Let's go.
And you know, maybe I need to back it up a little bit. I was listening to one of our own episodes and I realized sometimes these questions just come out of left field. And I'm like, maybe I need to set the field first a little bit.
Yeah, a little preamble, a little fourscore and 7 years ago. Yes. Here's how the question came to be.
So my daughter ran track in high school and college, had very successful experience running track. And I'm just proud of her. And she learned so much during that time. And she had a fantastic track coach in college. Really meant a lot to her. And it was encouraging, created the right space. It's really important to create the right space for athletes. And there's not a lot of coaches out there that know how to do it. And he created this right space for her. And he moved. She was very sad about that. For her last year of track, she had a new coach. He moved to the East Coast to take over a different track program. And he made a statement and then asked a question that I would love for us to play with.
Yeah, sure.
He said, "I am so tired. I'm working harder than I've ever worked. I have more challenges than I've ever faced before. And I feel more fulfilled than I've ever felt in my life." And he said, "Sophia, are you feeling fulfilled in your life right now?" And since she's not here to answer the question, I'm just going to share that with you and our audience. Are you feeling fulfilled?
Are you asking me directly now?
Why not?
Yeah, rarely. There are times when I feel it and it's where I feel like my gifts and my purpose are aligned.
Yeah.
And like I'm using the, you know, who God made me to be on mission and to connect with people and reach people. But I do a pretty good job, as I know most people do, of checkmating myself out of sitting with positive emotion for any reasonable length of time, which stinks.
Yeah.
I felt fulfilled for about 30 seconds over the past week, and it was so emotionally and spiritually satiating.
I'm sorry for laughing, because
I take no offense to that, because if you're laughing at that, you have to be able to identify with that in some capacity, no?
Yes. Yeah. And that could be 30 seconds more than a lot of people may have experienced last week.
Well, right? Do we have to establish some definitions of what is fulfilled before we even...
Yes. And we also have to actually analyze whether that's even a good question to be asked. But let's start with, what does it mean to be fulfilled? How would you take a crack at defining that term?
I would probably go back to my working definition that I inserted into my first answer, when gifts meet purpose. The fulfillment comes when gifts meet purpose. And that's just shooting from the hip. If you gave me more time, I would probably come up with something a little bit more sophisticated potentially, but this one feels not too rough of a definition.
I want to just kind of keep playing with it and adding to it and building, you know, shaping it. Clay on the potter's wheel, right? And when gifts meet purpose, I like that. To me, anytime we're talking about feeling fulfilled, there is a measure of something that is a high line on the watermark, right? Surface tension, fulfilled.
Top of the glass.
Right. Which is cool. And maybe that's kind of the nuance that you're talking about, is that nexus, that place where what we were designed to do is in alignment with what we're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mission fulfillment, being who we're designed to be. So I like that. I think about even how it was used in the Bible. Fulfillment was used personally, but it was also used with regard to prophecy, right? Fulfillment of prophecy,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because it's something that was foretold, predicted, that came to fruition. There was kind of an alignment at a point in time in history where that purpose was met. The words for the purpose was met for an event that demonstrated God is the only one that could have done this because God is the only one who can know the future. And so, yeah, that gifts meeting purpose, that's a good definition. I like that. What would you add to that?
That there's joy in it. I think we yeah. should inject joy into it. That's an essential element of it. And we experience that fulfillment. I mean, I want to put God as the underwriting to all of this, is that it's God-centered.
Yeah.
So hopefully, as a listener, you picked up that that was an implied baseline of my definition, but I think it's probably proper to
yeah.
spell it out clearly. Is that the gifts are God-given, the purpose is God-driven, and then the joy is shared
yeah.
with Jesus.
Sure.
So I think that needs to be part of the equation if we're failing to set that as the explicit definition, then it will default to a more worldly and, let's say, somatic sensation style deal where it's, I feel fulfilled because I got my promotion.
Yes.
And it's like, it's maybe temporarily professionally satiating.
Right.
But it's not necessarily definitionally fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good point, which brings us to a clarification question. What's the difference between feeling fulfilled and experiencing fulfillment?
Oh, gosh. That's a great question. Can you reset on that?
Well, what's the difference between feeling fulfilled? Because that was the original question. That was the first kind of thing that I just paused. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's even the right question. What's the difference between feeling fulfilled and experiencing fulfillment? Because it's interesting. Embedded in your, I felt it for 30 seconds in the last week. Could be just that. You just felt it for 30 seconds and may somehow be convinced that you are only in alignment with your gifts and your purpose for the 30 seconds, whereas maybe an experience of fulfillment may include or not include feelings. What's your thought?
Well, this goes to something that you and I have kind of been playing with off the podcast a little bit on, is are we over-emotionalizing our spiritual reality, which I think we definitely can. I mean, you and I as talkers, thinkers, people who like to noodle on things, that's a pitfall that I think a lot of us, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a thinker too. You're probably somebody who likes to analyze and digest and bounce ideas off of people. But there's a trap in that we can tack our spiritual our whole spiritual life to our emotional reality. And my emotional reality is changed by how much sleep I get, whether I'm eating well, how my friendships are going. There's a lot of circumstantial stuff that can really change the tone and texture of my emotional reality, as it can for everybody, whether it's relational or physiological. But the spiritual should transcend that. And so, you know, I'm going back to, when was the last time you felt fulfilled? Or I don't know if that was the exact question, but it's, how can we more often notice that we are in a lane of spiritual fulfillment rather than necessarily feeling it? It's almost like it's a level of knowing that extends beyond whatever our liminal emotional scale is.
Yes. Agreed. quick left turn at Albuquerque, as Bugs Bunny would say.
What, yeah.
Do you think Jesus experienced fulfillment?
Could you say that he was fulfillment? That might be an easy cartwheel out of your question, but I think it also plays.
Okay, so how does that impact? If he was fulfillment, how does that impact his earthly experience and as he was walking around? Do you think he experienced fulfillment when he was arguing with the Pharisees? When he was being ridiculed by a crowd, do you think he was experiencing fulfillment?
Not in an emotional sense, but in a spiritual sense. I think we need to draw that distinction.
Because we probably need to go there. Because my next question was going to be, can we experience fulfillment when we're working in a job that we don't like, if we're married to a person we don't like, if we have kids that we don't like, if whatever the usual suspects are in terms of things that can choke out feelings of fulfillment, can there actually be fulfillment embedded in those somehow that we can discover?
Probably some of the deepest and truest of fulfillment comes when all other signs should point to you feeling scattered, emotionally unhinged, and kind of a sense of, if you should be feeling a sense of despair, but you're not. I mean, I think that's interesting. Going back to this soccer coach, and what he said was, I've never had more challenges, I've never been busier, yet I feel more fulfilled. So there's got to be some wisdom that we can glean from that, which is, oh, maybe the true fulfillment shows up when things are not the prettiest. And that's actually how we know. We've talked about, like, when you have joy in a time that should be nothing but sorrow, that's how you know the joy is authentic and true. It's easier to get joy confused when you're happy. When you're winning at a go-kart race, you could say it's joy, but it's probably just transitory happiness. But that's like this fulfillment sort of concept is maybe the truest kind and the most authentic kind that we can point to and say, my judgment is not clouded by positive circumstance at all. And so I know that this is real because my circumstances are pretty, pretty bleak.
Yeah. So I feel like a little boy with both of my hands on my cheeks, leaning in to say, that sounds nice. How do I get there? How do I experience it? I'm leaning in. I'm curious. I want to know. You just described a life that I want, and I think there's a lot of people want. How do we get there? How do we get to a place where we can experience fulfillment in the middle of a chaotic culture, in the middle of a traumatic relationship? What does that look like?
Well, the good news is we don't have to figure it out because it's already been figured out. We have the answer key, and his name is Jesus.
Which, again, is wonderful. It feels a little bit like a cartwheel out of the difficult question.
100%.
Because you're going to have to tie
it. It sounded nice, though, right?
It did. It sounded really good. He's always the answer. And that said, and it's interesting. Okay, let's play with that. He is fulfillment. So how is the person of fulfillment the key to us feeling fulfilled in all of these places where we might shake our head and say, it's not possible to feel fulfilled here? It's a dead-end job. It's a dead-end relationship. It's a dead-end circumstance. It's a dead-end health situation. How can fulfillment itself, the person of fulfillment, change that?
I mean, Jesus, it is finished. Isn't that what he said on the cross? Finished, fulfilled? I feel like that's where we need to look for fulfillment and also stop trying to, we'll reset on this thought. Let's not try to fill God-sized holes with worldly things.
It's very good. Yeah. That's very good. Jesus didn't. Why would we? Right? He had a totally different operating system. And an operating sister, too. I don't know if he had a sister. We know he had brothers. I don't know if she did operations either, but he had a different operating system that went well beyond this world, and we really functionally are living like this is all there is. And he did not. He knew the glories that were to come. He knew the relationship that was to come. He knew love extended well beyond the door of death, because he knew there was going to be a resurrection to beauty, to goodness, to love, to everything that we were ultimately designed for. So the question still lingers, how can Jesus help us to experience fulfillment when we're not winning the go-kart race? I do love go-karts, by the way. So
who
that's
doesn't?
Wonderful. Gosh, why is that? Why do we have such a fast? I saw a kid ripping down the street the other day in a go-kart. Oh, it took me back to my childhood and joy. Oh, it's so fun.
It's all acceleration and deceleration. It's a lot of rate of change, and that's where the excitement comes from. We don't find excitement in going the same speed. So there's a lot of change of speed in go-karting, yes. And you get to flex on your friends.
Yes, that's very true.
But back to your question is how do we experience fulfillment in the way that Jesus did, or how do we begin to have a more Jesus-like operating system in the way that we experience fulfillment as an idea?
I don't even know if I know. I think maybe we've referenced this before. I put this in a paper that I wrote. Albert Einstein was asked once that if he had to answer a question that his life depended upon the answer, he had 60 minutes. Your life depends on the answer, getting it right. He said, what would you do? And he said, I would spend 50 minutes making sure I was asking the right question, which I think is very insightful, because you and I here can spend time talking about questions that will take us into the weeds instead of into the places we need to go.
Well, fulfillment's not the goal, is it? Isn't fulfillment just a consequence of purpose, relationship, and gifts combined? So if we're aiming for fulfillment, we're probably going to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Unless we, I like that, unless we aim for fulfillment in a different time. It's kind of like happiness. People, every person wants to be happy. That's part of the makeup of who we are. We're hardwired to want to be happy. To me, often the best question to ask is when? When do you want to be happy? If you want to be happy today, in a moment, you can go out and do something that will create feelings of happiness. You can win the go-kart race today. But there's a lasting happiness that's longer, that's deeper, that stands the test of time, that would require different conversations, different decisions, different choices.
It's getting harder and harder to like even contemplate eternity for me. If I can just kind of identify a shortcoming as a byproduct of the way that I interface with the world, because there seems to be just a never-ending present crisis after crisis after crisis. And so I'm constantly being sucked into this is the present moment. This is your story that's happening. This is how you're experiencing the next crisis, the next existential threat, the next problem. And it like really hijacks eternity. The way that our culture and the way that information is shared, it's almost like it's designed to hijack our eyes from eternity and say, okay, there's this ceaseless present where everything is always wrong. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of things that are not going well in this world of ours, but just being aware of it all the time. And it puts so much weight on the stories of the day rather than the stories and the person. Mm. So, gosh, that's a challenge. I was listening to a conversation the other day where the gentleman who was being interviewed talked about the importance of storytelling coupled with emotion and how important that emotion is when we're living a story, or else we don't commit it to memory. And so how do we add positive emotion to our concept of eternity? I think you have to sit with that. You have to sit with that, but there are a lot of stories competing for the central narrative in your life. And it's getting more and more difficult. I'll shoot my hand up and say, I noticed those stories competing mm-hmm. for my God story and yeah. the story that God wants to write in me. And so that level of fulfillment that would be being in sync with God now and forever is being encroached upon constantly, and that's happening to all of us. So how do you reclaim the story and then blast that out into eternity? I don't know. I mean, it could be a Luddite style revolution to start smashing phones and taking down telephone wires, but who knows, man? I'm not answering your question, by the way. I'm tiptoeing around it, and I'm telling
you. That's what we do here, you and I. We go for a walk with ideas. We just go for a walk in the park with a question or with an idea, and we explore it. And often God shows up and shares some pretty cool insights, which is why this is such a fun journey for us to do together.
You got something noodling right now?
Well, first of all, I really like what you said earlier about fulfillment and getting so distracted with this world that we forget the next one. And I do think, you know, even in John 13, Jesus said before he washed the disciples' feet, grimy, we talked about that before, it said, Jesus, knowing where he came from, knowing that all things had been put under his authority and knowing where he was going, now showed them the full extent of his love. So there was a knowledge of his past. There was a knowledge of who he was in the moment and the power that was available to him and where he was going, his destiny. That was locked into his operating system. And he used that authority, that history, that love, that destiny, that power in order to serve those around him. That's truly amazing.
And when we hear that story, we can't stop thinking about our own feet.
Yes.
Rather than thinking about eternity.
That's right. But I'm trying to think about fulfillment through the lens of the New Testament. Paul and Silas were thrown into prison. They did a good deed. Doesn't it suck when you do a good deed and it doesn't work out? No good deed will go unpunished.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, hate that. And that's happened to me multiple times in the last week. And it's really annoying. Paul and Silas healed this woman, this girl who was a fortune teller. She had a demon that was allowing her to foretell the future for people. And her handlers were furious that they had taken away their source of income. They drove the demon out of this girl. Now all of a sudden she can't tell the future anymore. There's no longer more demon present.
Exercised and demonetized.
Demonetized. You know what? Brilliance just leaks out from you even when you aren't even trying. Demonetized. I can't believe that. Okay, so yeah, they demonetized the girl and the situation. And they got thrown in jail. You and I get thrown in jail for doing a good deed. What are we going to do?
I think it's an ability to notice the larger story at play rather than being hyper fixated on our own story. in some capacity.
I think you're getting ahead of us for a second. What are you going to do? You do a good deed and you get thrown in jail. What do you experience?
I'm frustrated and I try to, and I probably run through the motions, a couple revenge fantasies of the people who got me there. I swear a little bit. I lament the loss of my freedom. I feel bad for myself.
That's right.
I maybe go through a mental Rolodex of who I wish I could have talked to. There's plenty of things there.
Thank you.
It's all me-centered. So let me graduate back to my concept of being more obsessed with my story rather than the story that's being written through me, with me, that I'm a part of.
Continue.
Where I am a character in the story, but not the main character. I mean, you see that online quite a bit. For anybody who's chronically online, you see people who have main character syndrome, and it's like an extreme egocentrism that is not healthy. But we can all dip into that space, you know, whether it's chronic or acute is a different story altogether. But perhaps the fulfillment is not being the thing, but being a part of the thing. And that thing is a person in a relationship. Morris, you need to analyze more. I feel like you've been letting me just waffle for this episode. I need you to start saying random stuff that's really profound.
Let's hold this question of the experience of fulfillment over this situation in Acts. These guys have done a good deed. They are thrown in jail. They are thrown in the innermost part of the jail. There's not getting any out. You can't dig out in a spoon. You can't Shawshank Redemption through a wall. They're in the inner part. Their feet were put in stocks. I've seen some TV. I've seen some movies. Not comfortable.
Right.
Usually they show bloody ankles, you know, after they've been in stocks. Acts 16, verse 25 says, about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Singing hymns to God and praying. Were they experiencing fulfillment? Were Paul and Silas experiencing fulfillment in the inner sanctum of this prison with their feet in stocks?
I got a 50-50 shot at this one, right? Yes.
Why?
They stop caring about the outcome. That might be it. We're not in charge of the outcome.
Confidence that a good God is writing a good story, that this good God is worthy of our praise, our worship, our glory, singing hymns and praying and saying, God, hey, not quite sure why we're here, but your servants are ready. We're ready to serve as long as we need to serve in whatever capacity we need to serve, because this life is about you and it's not about us. What a beautiful reminder and a beautiful scene of fulfillment. I love what you said earlier about fulfillment. Maybe it's something that we should just glance at because it's really the byproduct, the result of something else. And that's being rightly understanding our giftedness, like you talked about, the mission that we have or our purpose, how God wants to use us. And you added a third little category of the relationships, the emphasis of relationships. That's fulfillment. And how cool would it be? How much glory do you think God would get if we can find ourselves with cancer, with the loss of a home, with the loss of a job, still able to sing hymns and pray because of the goodness of God, because of our confidence that somehow we will see the goodness of the Lord even in the land of the living.
Well, that's not an if question for us. It's a when question. Catastrophe will strike all of us to different degrees at different times. I came upon a word the other day as I was reading, and it was eucatastrophe. You know that word, don't you?
Oh, I'm smiling because that was the name of my fantasy football team, and nobody understood it. Everybody said, why would you name a fantasy football team catastrophe? And I'm like, And I created an opportunity. The guys I was in a fantasy football league with weren't Christians. They gave me an opportunity to explain. Tell what it means.
No, I feel like you need to
tell what it
means.
Please. It's more fresh in your mind.
No, well, the root of you added to catastrophe, EU added to catastrophe, means it's a good catastrophe. It means it's an unforeseen series of events that end in beauty and goodness rather than calamity and ruin, which completely hijacks the way that we think about any chaotic situation. Is like, wait a second, there's good that comes from this?
Yes.
I hope that's the word that maybe we walk around with today is eucatastrophe. Yes. Maybe I write that as the episode title.
Yes.
Because there's fulfillment in knowing that the outcome is not ours and that it will end in something good. And so that's kind of a eucatastrophe, that the locus of control is outside of us, and we can be comfortable with that, and we can feel fulfilled in knowing that we don't have to do all the heavy lifting, or that we can't.
And Paul and Silas probably did not know that word, but they knew the concept. They knew that one thing would build on another thing, and that God was working and good would happen, because that's exactly what happened. This jailer rushes in. He's about ready to kill himself because he knows, goodness, if there was an earthquake and these guys are singing hymns, he said, I'm toast, man. I better kill myself. I'm save myself and my family the disgrace. And they're like, no, don't harm yourself. We're all here, which just floored him. The jailer called for the lights. He rushed in and fell trembling before Paul and Silas. Isn't it interesting how when we truly encounter someone that has a relationship with God, it does something in our soul, doesn't it? There's something that happens in our soul when we're like, wow, this isn't pretend land. This is someone who is genuinely being impacted by the love and sacrifice of Jesus. This jailer says, what do I need to do to be saved? And they replied, believe in the Lord Jesus and you will be saved, you and your household. And they were. Eucatastrophe. What a beautiful, beautiful concept. Well, this has been fun. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Once again, we want to thank the people at Go Ministry International, and also the people that are behind the walk, the beach walk, and walks to Ladera and different places around the city, and hopefully the country as that concept is growing. We're thankful that the partnership that they've formed with us so that we can get this out into the world. And we are passionate about it. We're passionate about trying to help people find joy beyond the walls of this world, I believe, as C.S. Lewis talked about. We're passionate about trying to help people see that a journey full of challenges and curveballs doesn't have to end in a pit. It can end in beauty and joy. I love the way you described that earlier. I'm going to listen to this podcast and listen to that over and over and probably write it down, because I love the way you captured that concept. And that's what Jesus has done for us. He's allowed us to flip the script on a crazy life and find joy, fulfillment, and beauty. Thanks for listening to us. As always, if this was an encouragement to you, share it with someone. If it was a blessing to you, blessed to be a blessing, share that with someone. And if nothing else, walk today as one who is deeply loved, cared for, died for, that God has a purpose for. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.